The following interview was recorded for CFRO The Pulse, Vancouver Co-op Radio's daily news show. The Pulse airs Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. on 100.5 FM and streaming live at coopradio.org. And today I'm live in the studio for the first time in about 18 months as we bring you a day after the election special. I'm joined on the phone by one of our producers on The Pulse, Sandy Goldman, and she's also a longtime producer and host of Each for All, The Cooperative Connection, a weekly public affairs show about the cooperative sector and the social economy. It airs every Tuesday evening at 8 o'clock right here on Co-op Radio. And I'm also joined on the phone by Jen St. Denis, a staff writer who covers the Downtown East Side beat for The Tyee. Welcome to you both.
Thanks, Jim. Great to be here.
I know. This is quite exciting. I got here just after 6 o'clock. And of course, the first thing I realized is I couldn't find a key to get into the control room. So
Wow. That
took me 10 minutes. But I found a key. I'm here. And strangely enough, everything is coming back to me. So I'm glad. It's a miracle, a small miracle that we're on the air. So again, thank you to you both.
Great. Glad that Co-op Radio is broadcasting live today, and we look forward to more of that in the weeks ahead.
Yes, indeed. Anyway, well, we are here to discuss last night's election, so can I just throw out the question, what are your thoughts of the results of the election?
Well, I'll jump in here. It's Sandy. We're pretty much where we were in terms of results of the 2019 election, and it feels like we've been, you know, put in the blender and spun around for the last 6 weeks of in a really unnecessary way. And it's unfortunate because we were in a state, already in an agitated state with the pandemic and the real serious issues in addition to that Canadians were facing in terms of affordability, homelessness, the opioid crisis, the climate crisis, which is front and center now, and the tragedy of the unmarked graves that came to light in Kamloops and other parts of the country at the beginning of the summer. So it was $610 million that this election cost taxpayers, and we're even more divided now than we were before. And by we, I say the political parties, but also a lot of Canadians who are already feeling anxious about their lives. And it really created more divisiveness at a time that we needed to continue to be working together. That's my first take on it.
And Jen, are you
well,
still
yeah,
with us?
You... When we look at those results compared to last election cycle in 2019, it's just really stunning that it's basically the same numbers, maybe just a few, like maybe one vote more for the Liberals and a couple less for the Conservatives. And of course, we still have all those advanced polls and mail-in ballots to also count. So some of those might change around. But yeah, basically, it's the same. It's a Liberal minority government. Maybe they'll have to work with the NDP a little bit on some issues to get things passed. Sandy was talking about the divisiveness that we saw in this election. And when we're talking about kind of the negatives of holding an election at this time with that really divisive issue of the vaccine mandates and vaccine passports, we really saw the PPC kind of be able to increase the number of people who are taking a look at their party and maybe gravitating towards them on that issue. So I think that's one of the most unfortunate parts of this election, considering that we came out with a result that was basically the same. And, you know, we'll just have to see going forward how that kind of translates in future elections.
Indeed, yeah. I know I spoke with several of the candidates in Vancouver East over the past week, and Karen Litsky was the candidate for the PPC, and she was made a point of saying that, yes, they were absolutely the only party in steadfast opposition to mask mandates. And I think even though I think they ended up with no seats whatsoever, and even Maxime Bernier lost his election in Quebec. But indeed, a lot of people seem to gravitate towards the PPC. I suppose they're probably a party to look at in the next election.
I think it'll kind of depend. I mean, one thing about the timing of this election is that that one issue of vaccine passports really seemed to grab a hold of people. And I think my sense is that the PPC were actually drawing people, you know, people sort of assume that they're drawing people away from the Conservatives. I actually think that they draw people away from a bunch of different parties, that there's a bunch of different issues that people maybe gravitate towards them on. But this time around, that vaccine passport issue just seemed to be the one that people were really grabbing onto. So the timing of this election and sort of like the unnecessary, there was no real need to have it 2 years after a previous federal election is quite striking.
So what did you think of the campaign, either of you? It's obviously Mr. Trudeau thought he could win his majority, and boy, was he wrong. Was he looking to Premier Horgan and his successful attempt to get a majority from last fall, or what do you suppose the thinking is behind this election?
You know, I think that a number of provinces did the same thing in New Brunswick, and we saw in Nova Scotia a result that was completely different than what the governing Liberal Party had thought would happen. So there was a big switch there, and I think it translated into some gains for the Conservatives in Nova Scotia last night. But, you know, Canadians are very cynical about politics and have a right to be, because Trudeau was, you know, riding high in the polls before the election campaign. And it was so obvious. I think they think that people, you know, just got off the turnip truck, so to speak, and really are, you know, not aware, and it's in the summer and dealing with a whole bunch of issues that are affecting their everyday lives, to be so self-serving in seeking a majority. And it really backfired. And what does that lead us to right now? You know, all the parties will be looking at their leaders, and we might start to see leaders, you know, being either forced to go or stepping down, and that just gets us into another cycle of politicking, right? And when does the real work get done? And I think that's what's really frustrating, because Canadians have said over and over again, they want politicians to collaborate, to work together across party lines on the real and very vital issues that, you know, that we're facing here. And so to have gone through this election campaign in the last week, you know, the bitterness and the divisiveness was just toxic and so unnecessary. So I think that we'd like to see people working across party lines, and you know, perhaps in this situation we'll see more of that. Certainly Canadians have sent a message that's what they expect. On the good news front, you know, we had the Vote Housing campaign, which launched just after the writ was dropped, and that was very well received. All the parties came up with you know, strong plans, different, but, you know, realize that housing affordability, homelessness, deep concerns about deeply affordable housing and social housing and wraparound supports, something that the federal government abandoned in the 1990s was being involved in national housing, and a plea for all levels of government to work together to ensure that people have a roof over their heads, a decent roof over their heads. And all the parties were, you know, talking about the climate crisis. The issue is, do they go forward with concrete action plans? Do they work together? For progressives, having Mr. Trudeau as the Prime Minister of the Liberal Party and having both the Bloc and the NDP there to get legislation through, they're both very strong on the environment. Blanchet is a former environment minister, and he's very well-versed, and Quebecers really care. So I guess, you know, if they roll up their sleeves and drop the partisanship and get to work, then we're hoping that we can see some good things happen. But if they're mired in leadership and their debates and their own politicking, you know, where does that leave Canadians? And so it's the frustration is mounting. Jim, I heard you talk about the rally by the sustainability teens, and it makes me think that, you know, good for them and everyone who gets out there and lets their voice be heard, because I think that's what it takes to move politicians, and we'll see what unfolds.
Well, my understanding is I spoke with Seth Klein last week about the climate emergency. He's written a book about it, A Good War, and that's what he was telling me, is that there's not the sense of emergency that's coming from the parties. They don't seem to realize that gigantic resources have to be marshaled in order to be able to tackle the climate change, and obviously it's going to have to be up to all of us to make sure that sense of urgency is passed on to the parties.
Yeah, and I think we saw that during the debate, where the English leaders debate, where the leaders just took a really long time getting to acknowledge that we actually had a huge loss of life and, you know, loss of people's homes this year because of climate change in British Columbia, especially with the heat dome, people dying because of that, and the fires in Lytton, people losing their homes in just such a tragic way. And it took them, you know, watching that debate and just thinking, when are they going to get off talking about these plans that people already have a hard time maybe wrapping their heads around, and like carbon emission targets and stuff? When are they going to acknowledge the human cost of climate change? And, you know, I think finally, I can't remember whether it was Jagmeet Singh or Amy Paul, but finally someone mentioned it. But it took them a while.
Yeah, it's got to be front and center here after, especially, as you say, Jen, in British Columbia, the summer that we went through here. And, in discussing that, as you did with Seth Klein, I spoke with Cam Fenton of 350.org last week on Each for All. Everyone is asking for clear, concrete plans with timelines, goals, and ways to measure the effectiveness. You know, promises are one thing, and I think Canadians are tired of the promises. They want to see these things put into action. On a positive note, I guess for people who are progressive, not having the Conservative Party at the helm means that the Northern Gateway project will not go ahead. And that's very good news for everyone involved. Nobody wanted to fight that battle again, and it was surprising that we heard that being resurrected in the Conservative campaign. We've got to see what happens over the next little while. And, you know, the Prime Minister said they're going to get back to work. A lot of Canadians said, you know, you really should have been at work this whole time, calling an election on the day that Kabul fell to the Taliban. There's still so much work to be done. It's very sad, too, to see the demise of the Green Party at a time when, the climate crisis is so apparent in the here and now, and that party has really, federally anyway, fallen apart. That Anna May Paul, who spent most of her energy campaigning again in Toronto Centre, a longtime Liberal fortress, came in fourth in that riding, and with all the infighting in that party over issues that are going on very far away in the Middle East, that has led to the bickering and the divisiveness at a time when the Green Party should be front and center, leading us in the climate, through the climate crisis, that they've pretty well cannibalized themselves and their leader, and the issues that she faced. I can't imagine that she's going to be able to stay on. And if you people watched the English debate, she was formidable and very intelligent, very committed. And it would have been really heartening to have her in Parliament. And sadly, that won't happen. There is a new voice, though, coming from Kitchener Centre, which is encouraging, and looks like Paul Manley lost his seat in Nanaimo Ladysmith. We don't know for sure, but it's looking that way. So the Greens are down by one, and that's sad. They won't have the same influence as before at a time that we need them there. So and people, you know, other climate champions like Avi Lewis didn't get his seat. I don't know why Jagmeet Singh didn't bring him out to speak more during the campaign. is a real climate champion. Well, he tried and he didn't get in, and there were others. We don't know what's going to happen in Vancouver Granville. That's very close to call right now. So the urgency of the issues is paramount, and we'll, you know, wait to see what happens. But one thing is for sure, Canadians have elected minority governments most of the 21st century. And, you know, that continues to be the way. Was this a referendum on how the Liberals handled the pandemic so far? People could say that, with giving them, you know, 158 seats at this point, not very different than 2019. But by and by, you know, it seems like Canadians want the parties to work together and not giving anyone a clear-cut majority to have their way. So we'll see.
I'd like to move the focus a little closer to home now and concentrate on Vancouver generally and East Vancouver in particular. What's your sense about, you know, Jenny Kwan winning yet again? I suppose it was a foregone conclusion, but have you got any thoughts on that?
Well, Jenny Kwan is a very strong candidate. We've seen her win quite a few times, so that was no surprise.
I noticed it. Yeah, she won quite decisively, too, I noticed.
Quite decisive win, which was not a surprise at all. I think on one of the big issues that I cover in the downtown east side, when we're talking about maybe being a little bit relieved that the Conservatives did not actually win this election, the toxic overdose crisis is one of those issues. And the federal government has a big role to play in that. And we saw that the Conservatives were focusing really heavily on putting a lot of money into recovery facilities, which is not a bad thing at all, but they were doing that to the exclusion of all else and hadn't mentioned harm reduction or safe consumption sites at all. So when we're talking about just, you know, the horrible fatalities that we've, the number of deaths that we've seen from the toxic drug crisis, I think that I'm sort of breathing a little bit of a sigh of relief on that issue in particular, because you know, recovery beds are great, and we need more of those. And it was great that they wanted to fund those. And it was great that they were looking at the overdose crisis as a health issue, not a criminal issue. But the other parties were sort of a little bit more looking at things like harm reduction, safe supply. Drug policy advocates probably would say that they weren't going far enough. But so on that issue in particular, we'll probably... it's probably a good thing that the Conservatives didn't get in.
Jen, I'd like to ask you something about that, if I might. Do you see the province of BC, the government here, taking more of the lead in actually creating more opportunities for safe supply and other alternatives that will help in the here and now? Do you see them having a bigger role?
Well, the province can certainly do more on safe supply. The feds could do more, though. And they have funded like a pilot program that the province is also partnering on, but it's the drug policy advocates say that it's really just one program. It doesn't go far enough. It should be expanded.
Is that at the Providence Health Center?
I don't know exactly where that's operating out of, but I think that the feds could also do more with expanding the type of substances that are on offer. So, for instance, making it easier to bring in prescription heroin. That's one,
right,
another area that the feds could lead on. And we still see Vancouver's request to basically decriminalize possession. They've requested an exemption from the Controlled Drugs and Substances Act to be able to do that. And that was made quite a few months ago, and it's still
right,
sort of sitting with Ottawa. And so then we saw them call this election. That issue hadn't been resolved. So I'll be looking for action from the federal government in particular on that as well.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of the issues of affordability, as we've said, and making housing a priority. I know that, as I said, the various parties have action plans. Jen, what do you see as the most urgent and important of the issues on the ground in the downtown east side in terms of changes that could
be made? Yeah, I think that building you know, truly affordable housing for people who make the social assistance or on disability that they can afford, that's the primary concern. And it's a really huge concern in the downtown east side because of the state of the single-room occupancy hotels in particular.
Right.
The SROs are just not really livable. They're really quite awful. So I think we need to, you know, have some sort of real plan to replace the SROs or renovate them so that they are actually self-contained suites, because they just really don't work for a variety of reasons and are quite horrific. I don't think that we're seeing enough money from Ottawa to do that yet. We have seen them have this, you know, a national housing strategy, but it's been criticized for not really having enough funding with it. We're not seeing the level of funding commitment from Ottawa that we used to see in the, as you were saying, the 70s and 80s before mm-hmm. they got out of housing in the 90s. Mm-hmm. So yes, it's great that we've seen them come back in after the Liberals got in 2015. That was a really key, promise and policy that they put in, but we need to see the funding. And so the city of Vancouver has this plan, this $1 billion plan to acquire all of the SROs. Mm-hmm. And they obviously, they need federal and provincial, partnership on that. So that's another thing to look for from the feds.
Mm-hmm. Again, this idea, and I heard it during the debate, about housing from various housing advocates along the way, the idea of all three levels of government working together, because they all have different responsibilities when it comes to housing and cutting through the red tape, right? Because it's so urgent to get those suites or places turned around so that they can be actually livable for people with wraparound supports that are needed. One thing that we haven't really talked about yet is empowering Indigenous peoples. And that wasn't talked about very much during the campaign, was it? Jen, did you hear very much? It was disappointing.
Yeah, we didn't hear very much about that. We did see some of the leaders. I think Jagmeet Singh went to Kaua'is First Nation early in the campaign. And but we know that, on Indigenous sovereignty, we know that the Liberal government is still fighting in court against the Human Rights Tribunal that decision to give $40,000 to all the kids that were, taken away from their families in the 60s scoop. And also, they've been ordered to pay the medical bills of, they've been ordered to give compensation for kids who didn't receive adequate medical care as well. But we know that the federal government is fighting that ruling in court, and so that's something that's still quite disappointing, and that's the Liberal government, that's their administration that's been doing that. That is something that we would have liked to see more of discussed on the campaign trail for sure.
Yeah, it's we're coming up to September 30th next week, the first national day of reconciliation, and big rallies planned and lots of support. Yet I find and it's wonderful in a sense, and the flags are still at half mast in honor of children in unmarked graves across the country. But again, these things are symbolic. I mean, they're important to raise mm-hmm. consciousness, but
yeah,
really,
and also
is it a lot of window dressing? I mean, I'm very disappointed that people weren't talking more about it. And I don't know.
Yeah, on the murdered and missing women file as well, there's the report that was delivered to government a few years ago.
Right.
We still haven't seen the recommendations really put into action. We still see them kind of working to implement it. It's taking a long time. So there's that issue as well that we'd like to see more action on.
Yeah, very important issue, to people in the downtown east side. And also, truth and reconciliation, the calls to action. Very few of those have been implemented. And so in my discussion with BC AFN Regional Chief Terry Teagy on Eats for All last week, he was saying, we need concrete action plans and implementing these. And government moves so slow. Justin Trudeau said that the relationship with Indigenous people is the most important one to him. And yet again, lots of window dressing and not things happening on the ground. And how can you say that when you're taking Indigenous people, children, right, to court on these matters? If you can spend $610 million on a campaign, right?
Mm-hmm.
And those are taxpayer dollars. They're coming out of our pockets. How can you not implement some really concrete action plans? So it's no wonder that Canadians feel a lot of cynicism around politics, but that's where we are. And then we have to say, well, what's the alternative, right? What can we do? And that's where you throw up your hands and wonder. Well, I guess what we can do is, you know, in our communities is, you know, work on the issues that are important to us locally and support each other to make change.
Yeah, and just because the parties have all of these, you know, the platforms that they've developed, it's not like they're set in stone. You know, we can still advocate for change, for policy change that is based on, you know, solid research. We can still, things can change. So that's the thing that we have to remember.
Right.
You know, not all of this policy that the parties have put out is totally set in stone, and governments can be pushed to do things differently.
I'm sorry to break in, but unfortunately we're pretty much out of time. So I do want to thank you both, Jen St. Denis and Sandy Goldman, for joining me here on The Pulse today. It's been great fun.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
It's good talking to both of you, and let's just keep up the fight. We'll keep going here, as Jen says. Lots of advocacy to do, and thanks for going live with us this morning, Jim.
Yeah, well, aside from the whole getting up early part, it was a lot of fun. CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.